The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome in, everyone, to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. The Red Sox pulled it off. They got an extra innings win against the Athletics. They stay in the wild card race, thankfully, with a 5-4 final tonight. I'm Jason. I'm here with Chris and Doug. And guys, this was a tight one. There were times where we were kind of looking at it going, you got to be kidding me. They're going to blow a second game in a row against this team. But they pulled it out. Bullpen was not great, but they held it together, and eventually the offense, who has been much maligned per usual, came through at the end. So bit of a tough game, bit of a grinder, but luckily he pulled it out. How'd you guys feel about this one?
Yeah, I mean, I think all of Red Sox Nation, every fan watching, can let out a deep breath, you know, because that was very, very close to being, you know, the worst point of the season, I would say. You know, even when we had, you know, some big losing streaks, we had the big losing streak after we traded Rafi, but it didn't, you know, this would have felt a lot different losing this game, you know, losing a second to the A's, losing another series in a row. We just can't afford it. We cannot afford a loss tonight. And, you know, they fought. They showed some life. You know, they fought, but still, this lineup is really making me nervous.
Yeah, I mean, I think about, you know, you made the point about Rafi, right? Like when we got rid of him and then we went on a little bit of a losing streak.
I think it was six in a row.
Yeah, it was six. Yeah. It felt like a million, but yeah, six in a row. But, you know, the difference was we weren't in a playoff position. We were chasing one, and I don't think we had the aspirations that we do at this point. I mean, we're literally in the final 2 weeks of the season, maybe even less at this point. And we're in a playoff position, although pretty close to not being in one. I guess my take on them being fighting for a third wild card going to that Toronto doesn't look like such a hot take now at this point, because the reality is, like you said, all of Red Sox Nation right now, yeah, we could sigh with a deep, you know, relief, breath, whatever you want to call it, but we're going to go, our heads are going to hit the pillow when we go to bed, and we're going to start crunching numbers, and we're going to start thinking, what are the odds that if we need, I don't know, six, seven, eight chances with runners in scoring position just to get one run across the plate, that's not sustainable for the rest of the regular season, let alone once you get to the playoffs.
It's a great point. And, you know, last night that reared its ugly head, right? They were so bad with runners in scoring position and they lost a one-run game. Tonight, a little bit better, but still, like, they had opportunities to blow this game wide open and they fumbled it. They had bases loaded again with nobody out. It was 2-1 with nobody out. But still, like, they had plenty of opportunities. And guys like Bregman just not quite delivering. And, you know, Jaron Duran woke up. They put him back in the leadoff spot. And lo and behold, he has three hits. Like, I don't know. Maybe keep him there. Like, maybe stop screwing around with Jaron Duran. Like, put him back in the leadoff spot where he's comfortable. But it felt uneasy. Like, Giolito was uneasy. Only made it 4 1/3 in this one. Like, he was kind of battling the whole way, had to get bailed out by some good defensive plays. So it's still, even though they won, it was a very uneasy win. It was a very uneasy game. Like, when they were down 4-2, I was honestly sitting there thinking, like, okay, this is it. They're just going to blow it. They're going to blow the rest of the season because, you know, like, I was texting my mother, who is a huge Red Sox fan, like maybe more rabid than I am, and she was pissed. And she's like, they're going to blow this. And, you know, she's been watching them much longer than I have. She was there for 86, so she knows. I don't know. They got Tampa, Toronto, Detroit after this. Like, you're having to fight this hard to beat the Athletics, and you got those teams going after you at the end. And look, the Rays are out of it, but you know the Rays would love to play spoiler and, you know, mess up your chances to go to the postseason. Toronto is division leader. They haven't slowed down. And you got Detroit. And yeah, a lot of people have been saying, like, maybe by then Detroit has nothing to play for. But even still, like, they're a good team. Even if they have nothing to play for, even if they rest Skubal, right? Because he's got the injury now. Doesn't matter. If they rest people, Detroit might be better than you. So it's one of those games where, yeah, I still think the Red Sox will make the playoffs. I haven't broken from that, but man, like, you had to scrape through this one. And you lost game one. You shouldn't have lost game one, but you did. And we were on the podcast last night saying, this should be a good win. You're facing this guy, Barnett, who is not a good pitcher. You've got Giolito, who's been one of your best. You've got the advantage here. But lo and behold, Giolito struggles a little bit. Your lineup is, once again, Jekyll and Hyde, just not quite hitting all of the cylinders. And you have to scrape by. So yes, like, it's great they got the win, but for a team that we're going to probably be talking about in October, it feels a little bit hollow to me. Like, just, it was too hard. Tonight was too hard for them. And I worry about, you know, the eight remaining games against those other opponents that are better than the Athletics that you have coming up.
Yeah, it's definitely not a great feeling right now. It's definitely not, you know, a feeling of high confidence in this team and in this lineup. You know, still the starting pitching is still there. Gio, you know, he didn't have it tonight, but he had a bit of that like bend don't break defense a little bit. You know, he walked a lot of guys, but you know, wasn't really letting any over until Wilson came in for him. And you know, people might look at Wilson, you know, letting up those runs, or look at Weitzert last night letting up those runs. It's like, it's hard to come in and feel like you have to be perfect when your lineup isn't producing and your lineup's not behind you, backing you up. I mean, you know, we only lost 2-1 last night, you know, and everyone's on Weitzert about it. It's like, well, you know, we only let up 2 runs the whole game, you know, and he comes in with players on. It's, you know, you want to see him get out of it. And, you know, he has a lot of blown saves, and I'm not defending him, but you know, I think it's more on the lineup sometimes. You know, it's more on the lineup than, you know, your pitchers aren't going to go out there and throw shutouts, not going to go out there and just let up one run. You know, you have to support these guys. And when it's coming down the last 2 weeks of the season, you know, I know everyone's tired and everyone's maybe a little banged up, but I feel like the pitching, you know, has more of an excuse about that. And you're right, Brett. It was great to see Duran in the leadoff spot again. He looked energized tonight. And he was the only one, but he definitely looked it.
Yeah, it's a fair point as far as the expectations of the pitchers to just be perfect every single night. I mean, it really feels like these pitchers basically are like goaltenders in hockey. It's like, all right, go and pitch a shutout because your offense is not going to put a puck in the net. That's how it feels every single night. With the exception of, I will say, Weissert, he's had his moments even before our offense. Like, he's been bad even when our offense could score 6-7 runs, and he would be just the guy who gave up a 9th run. But, you know, I think even me, who sometimes is probably one of the more pessimistic fans on this team, or I should say our podcast, like, when I said that take as far as them fighting for a third wild card, I didn't have the expectation they would be knocked out. It was like, all right, they might go from second to third. Nothing is breaking our way right now. Every night, and even the broadcast said it, like tonight, and they said it yesterday, and it feels like every night, the teams we need to lose win, and we find ourselves in these predicaments every single night where we're fighting with teams that are so far removed from the playoffs, and then you watch the Yankees take care of business. They're just beating up on teams. Now, yeah, I know they lost the Twins the other day, but for the most part this season, they have feasted on the teams that they should beat. And lo and behold, we started thinking about a week ago, oh, Detroit and Toronto, they might have this thing wrapped up so far that they know their seeding. They're not going to be having anything to play for. Well, lo and behold, they're also on, one's on a 2-game losing streak, the other one lost. So they're probably going to both be fighting for that first seed, which is big because you don't have to play in that first round. And who the hell wants to play an extra round? I know some teams go, oh, you know, I'd rather be playing baseball because of momentum. But let's face it, momentum in baseball only goes as far as your next starting pitcher. It doesn't exist like the other sports. So having that time off, I think, is a good thing for teams for the most part. But the other thing that's really driving me crazy when we think about the offense is it feels like, especially when there's runners in scoring position or just even ducks on the pond in general, every person that comes up is immediately 0-2. I don't know if you guys noticed this. When there's no one on base, we fight off pitches. We're fouling them off. It's a 10, 11, 12 pitch at bat. As soon as there's someone on base, 0-2. I'm like, what the hell is going on? It's like we completely just lose our fundamentals. We have no game plan and we panic. We're swinging at the first pitch, hoping we run into one and that the pitcher makes a mistake. And half the time, these pitchers are either at their feet or 3 feet out of the strike zone either way. And I just, for the life of me, I don't understand how the hitting coach is not doing anything about this. Because this isn't just a one-night thing. It's literally been like the last 2 months, and it's an every-night thing as the games get bigger. And I don't know what the solve is other than you got to have some sort of preparation going up to the plate, and you got to figure it out because this is not going to fly. Like, I'm with you, Jason. If I had to bet, I'd say we probably make the playoffs, but I wouldn't be shocked if we didn't. Not when we're struggling against the A's at this point, and the teams that are behind us are winning, and the teams ahead of us that we still have to play are losing and still will have something to fight for that are just better than us, to be honest.
It's a great point. And like we talked about it on the show last night, that this lineup is lacking that middle of the order, just power menacing bat. And you had him, you decided to trade him away. That's Rafael Devers. He's gone now. Roman Anthony, who looked like he might have been able to at least somewhat sign slow shoes, and you know, not power-wise, but in terms of a good bat, he's out. You don't have a guy like that in your lineup anymore. Alex Bregman has kind of turned into a pumpkin. And I want to get into more of him later, because the whole thing with him being like, I'm all about winning, but I'm also going to talk about my contract while the team's in a playoff race and all this, I think is kind of BS. But whatever, he's gone a little bit backwards. Duran's been up and down, and you know, he's been moved around the lineup. Like, you can't afford to be doing that. And you know, it's with the runners in scoring position, like Chris is right. They just go down 0-2. And it's almost like they're looking for the perfect pitch to hit the grand slam. Like, you don't have to do that. You know, just manufacture some offense. Like Will Middlebrooks talked about it on the broadcast last night with when Rafael was up with the bases loaded, nobody out. It's like, you know what? Rafael's been struggling. Don't worry about it. You don't have to hit the big home run that we know Rafael likes to hit. Just get a ball in the air, get a run in, like move the offense along. Or even if you hit a ground ball and it's a double play, that's fine. You can see now, you can see two outs, but you get a run. Like against a team like the Athletics, that's all you need. And it feels like the Red Sox just don't have a feel for that. Like every guy is going up there with his own agenda. With Bregman, it's I want to launch because I stupidly talked about my contract and I want to make more money and I got to hit home runs. With Rafaela, it's I'm the guy that has the energy on this team. You know, I got the ice in my veins. Like I've got to hit the grand slam every time. I can't just hit a sack fly. Like it's too much of like individual efforts in terms of just team stuff. Again, you've got, I forget what inning it was, but they had two guys on, nobody out. And I think they were down at the time. And just, instead of moving runners over, instead of just playing fundamental baseball and trying to manufacture runs, every guy went up there swinging out of his ass. That's what this team does. Every batter goes up there swinging for the downs. And it's just not sustainable. And I think, credit to Tyler Milliken, like, I think he put up a stat that, like, the Red Sox are towards the bottom of the league in terms of productive outs, right? Like, in terms of runs scored based on productive outs. And that's easy to quantify. It's sac flies, you know, infield outs, bunts, whatever, all of that stuff. The Red Sox are towards the last in the league at doing that. So, you know, we've talked about it before. Like, they play small ball, but they're not good at it. Like, if you don't get the sacrifice outs, if you don't get the productive outs with runners in scoring position, and you have no power in your lineup, and you don't have guys that are just willing to put the ball in play and make, you know, get the chains moving, then you're not going to score. And that's why they don't score. Now, tonight, did they do so bad? No, they scored 5 runs. They won. Great. Okay. But you look at last night, you lost 2-1. And I know a lot of us don't want to go back to last night, but that's a 1-run game you should have won. You could be up 2-0 in the series. You could be in a much better position in the wildcard race. But you dropped that game and you had to scrape and claw and fight for this game. Just the offense has got to be better. And whether that's a Cora thing or whether it's just the guys that he has at his disposal, I don't know. Like, I think it's just their fundamentals are all over the place. And I think tonight you saw it. Like, they could have won that game handily, but instead they needed extra innings to get it done. And again, you get into the playoffs, which I think we all agree they should be in. It's not going to be good enough.
Will said the same thing tonight too. I forget. I think it was maybe after the inning you're talking about. We had first and second. I think no outs, and he said everyone's just going up looking for the home run, and I really think our hitting approach really needs to be questioned. I don't know who's really in charge of that. You know, it's hard to figure out who's in charge of anything right now with the Red Sox. Well, where, you know, what's coming from where. You know, if it's coming from Cora, the hitting coaches up in the offices, it's hard to know at this point. But, you know, it looks like everyone's just going up there, swinging out of their shoes. And I think it could be said that that's, you know, why Roman gets hurt swinging a bat. You know, he's going up there swinging as hard as he can at a pitch. You know, it's you're bound to hurt something eventually, I think, when you're going up there swinging as hard as you can every time, you know, just looking for the fences. And, you know, this team is in a position and, you know, the GM and coach have us in a position where now we are a small ball team, but we don't know how to do it, like you were saying.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is, listen, I love Roman Anthony. I was, like, extremely pessimistic when he got hurt. I was like, damn, like, our offense kind of already sucked with him, if we're being honest. But he was definitely the motor to the offense. Yeah, he didn't have tons of power as far as his numbers, but he's consistently getting on base. He'd have productive outs. And, I mean, he was a singles machine, right? And, like, getting guys on base, like, it makes things happen, especially for our offense. But, like, even yesterday, you were talking about, Jason, like, we lost 2-1. That's a game we could have blew them out. Like, there was another game where we had a million left on base. Today, yeah, we win 5-4. But this game could have been 12-4. I mean, crap, if we just got a base hit with the bases loaded, one of the 9 other times that we had second and third or first and third with no one out or one out, I mean, this could have been absolute blowouts. And the fact that if our offense is this bad because we're missing Roman Anthony, and again, this is not an indictment on Roman Anthony. It's more of an indictment that if that's what it takes to win, that you need that one player to make this team better, or that much better, like, it's Craig Breslow. Like, what are we doing? You need a rookie that we called up a third into the season to literally carry this team? Like, are you kidding me? We're not the Kansas City Royals. We're the Boston Red Sox. We're a top 3, worst case scenario, top 5 market in Major League Baseball. We have the means and resources. This should not be an issue. So figure it the hell out. That's one. Two, one thing you said, Jason, and I don't know if this is the case, but I'm kind of speculating here only because I watched it happen here in New York. What pisses me off with the Bregman thing, because I wouldn't doubt that Scott Boras probably leaked that information, because he did the same thing to Pete Alonso, and I live here in New York, so I watched it happen to Mets fans because my brother's a Mets fan. And he opens his big mouth, and now the player has to speak to it because no one's going to talk to Scott Boras, right? They're going to ask the player, and it puts them in a bad spot. But like with Pete Alonso, he did it for the whole year. He sucked. Then he had some playoff magic. They went on a run. Ultimately didn't win anything. But like to do that to Bregman, especially his age, where he's at coming off an injury, we're in the middle of the playoffs. You can kind of tell Bregman's pressing now at this point. So I almost wonder, like, is he feeling the pressure, being like, crap, I'm answering for this. He knows he's not doing well. And it only just continues to mount and mount and mount. And that's not an excuse for him, because at the end of the day, he has enough experience, whether it's, you know, major league experience and then just experience winning, frankly, that this should not be an issue. Like, he should be able to snap himself out of it. But Scott Borish is, like, honestly, for anyone that's not in their prime, they should not have Scott Borish as their agent, because that guy opens his mouth to try and get him dollars and cents and ends up costing his clients so much money by opening his damn mouth. But I digress on that. We need to figure out what this team can do to fix some of these woes for the rest of the season, but even long-term, because the season will end at some point. And even if Roman Anthony comes back healthy, like, I don't expect this guy to come back and be the MVP of the league. And the truth is, the way that this team looks on a day-in and day-out basis, long-term to be real contenders, they need an MVP-like presence in that locker room. You know, we got the culture and the coaching type player with Bregman. That's one component, but we do need someone that's actually going to make things happen statistically. And I think Roman Anthony is a part of that solution, but he's not the full answer. So, you know, this is a call out to Breslow. Like, you got to figure it out if you even have a job, because I got news for you. This team misses the playoffs, someone's head is rolling. I know a lot of people don't think that's the case, and maybe I'm wrong, but someone's head should roll.
Yeah, and your point about Boris and Bregman is a good one, because most likely that wasn't Bregman's decision. That was a Scott Boris decision. You know, like, let me drive up the price, and, you know, let me get that, you know, get that in the works early. It's frustrating, because, like, Bregman was seen as, like, a leader on this team, especially with the young guys, Anthony, Meyer, Campbell, when he was here. And then that report comes out, not only when the team is kind of, you know, flailing a little bit and still in the wild card race, but, like, hanging on, but also Bregman has sucked ever since that report came out. And it's like, that's where I look at Scott Boras. I'm like, do you know your clients? Like, did you consult with Bregman before that? Did they agree, you know, together? Like, yeah, let's put that out there. Let's leak this to Jeff Passan. Because Jeff Passan doesn't just put that on Twitter out of nowhere. Like, we know this. He's a good reporter. He's not a Bob Nightingale. He's not a John Heyman. Like, he vets his sources very well. There's no way Passan reports that unless either Boris or Bregman or both told him directly, like, yeah, no, we're looking to hit free agency, and, you know, that's it. So I just question the timing of it. Why then? Why then, when the Red Sox are, you know, yeah, they're in the wild card position, but it's not guaranteed. They weren't leading their division by 10 games.
But like, that's the reason why, Jason, because, you know what? Boris is a selfish prick. And he went, okay, this is a team that literally hasn't made the playoffs in 4 out of the last 5 years, desperate and does dumb things. They're starting to flail. He's been their best overall player now that, you know, everyone else has gone or hurt or traded. Let me get the most money while I can. And like you said, let me get the deal done now, because they'll do it out of desperation. That was his hope. Now, we didn't do the deal, and Bregman is now put in a position where he'd be an idiot to opt out, because no one is paying him the money we're about to pay him if he opts out with the performance that he's given us this far. That obviously can change if things turn around, but that's the answer to your question. He totally tried to catch us with our pants down, take advantage of us, and it didn't work, and he ended up costing his client a lot of money. And you know what? Hopefully this is a lesson learned for Bregman, if he was complicit to this in any way, shape, or form, and to the rest of Scott Boras's clients, because this is the kind of crap that costs you hundreds of millions of dollars. And you know what? You'll be fine without it, but you're just screwing yourself, your reputation, and more importantly, you're screwing us as the fans.
He's definitely been pressing since, too. You can tell. You can see how frustrated he is. On a game like tonight where he had some good contact, you know, he hit that one liner, but it was just right to the left fielder. you know, and you can see it, like, even that, you know, he's just, you know, he's in, he's like getting unlucky even when he is hitting the ball. And you can really see it on his face that he's definitely frustrated right now, and he's definitely not in a great spot, like mentally, physically, I don't know. But if he was anyone else, I think we'd be even more concerned. But with his playoff history, there's just a little bit of hope, I think, maybe. You know, like, you can leave the window open to be like, well, you know, he's a veteran. He's been there before. He's a champion. You know, I don't want to count him out for the playoffs yet. He's too good a player to just say he can't turn it around. But if he didn't have his resume that he has, I think it'd be, you know, maybe even more concerning than it is right now.
Yeah, Bregman's resume certainly works for him because, again, this is, we hope, a playoff team. So you want him playing in October. And yeah, like, he has shown that he's a good leader. Like, the young guys have taken to him. That's great. But is that worth $40 million alone? The fact that he's a good, you know, as people put it, an assistant hitting coach to Roman Anthony and Marcelo Meyer and, you know, maybe Christian Campbell at some point? I don't think so. Like, again, his numbers have been dropping ever since he got back from injury. And, you know, it's tough. Like, he probably came back too soon. He still doesn't run very well. Like, he's trying to help the team get into the playoffs. That's tough. But, like, you know, for that to be the way it is, and also for you to leak a report saying, well, we're definitely in the free agent market, even though if we stay here, we can make $40 million. Like, that's no small number. I'm sorry. Like, that's nothing to sneeze at. So for him to kind of, him and Boris to leak that, it's just, it's weird, especially when in spring training he was all like, I'm all about winning and I'm a winning player and I want to be in a winning organization. Okay, well, if you care about winning, then why are you talking about your contract in August, September, when nothing's really set? Like, the playoffs haven't even started yet. It just, and like, if we get into the playoffs and Bregman goes, you know, 0 for 16 and the Red Sox get dumped, well, how's that going to look? Like, how's that going to affect free agency? So I just thought the whole timing of it was really weird. And I don't know. It, you know, look, you're going to need him, like you guys said. And that is true. So hopefully he comes through and we'll deal with the free agency part of it afterwards. I still think he's going to opt out. And I think the Red Sox will be interested because, quite frankly, I don't think they have a choice but to be interested because who the hell else is going to play third base next year? But we'll see how that all pans out. One thing I wanted to get to is, so Masataka Yoshida actually had a pretty productive night tonight. Two hits, drove in a run or two. But we're facing a choice here where Willy Abreu is going to come back. And we were hoping it'd be for the Oakland series. Now it seems like he's coming back for the Tampa series. Feels like it's,
I feel like every game they say,
yeah,
next game.
Like, it's day by day with him.
Right?
Like, yeah. You know, today he was at 85%. Tomorrow he's at 92%, and who knows?
Right.
But they're going to face a choice where they got to put their, if they do make it, they got to put their playoff roster together. And the playoff roster, as far as I know, has nothing to do with salaries or anything. It's just active roster guys by a certain date. Who do you want on the roster? Do you guys want Yoshida on the playoff roster if they make it? Or would you rather like a Nick Sogard or a Nate Eaton?
So I'll answer that question, but I do think there's one more point to make about the Bregman stuff we were talking about that I think is important. And it's a devil's advocate point. You know, we've talked about, and I've been one of the biggest proponents of his success in the playoffs, right? And hopefully we will be there. The more and more that I watch him and his struggles, and then the more and more that I look at our team, you start to kind of realize that he's had a lot of success, but he also is not going to have a Correa, and he's not going to have any of the players that were on those teams that went to World Series behind him, not with this team, especially now that Anthony's out. That's one thing. And the second point is that where his value really is outside of the coaching part is he's the perfect type of player to have on your team to get the names that we have not been able to get the last couple of off seasons, right? Because he's a good enough name and player where it's like, oh, I want to play with that guy, but he's not big enough and good enough where it's like, oh, I'll never be the guy because he's there, Like, let's face it, there's a big reason Soto didn't go to New York is because he was all about, he wanted to be the guy. He was never going to be the guy with Judge. And Bregman's the type of guy where he's more like, you know, oh my God, I can't think of the shortstop on the Mets. Please, someone help me.
Lindor.
Lindor. He's more of like that caliber, really good player, but like can easily be usurped as the best player if you bring in the right name. So that's why I think Bregman on the Red Sox is a good fit for both parties, because we need to bring in some real talent. Now, to answer your question, let's face it. If we were playing a good team, Yoshida's ball today, yeah, maybe he gets the RBI because there was only one out. He's out at first. I mean, he's like a turtle going down the line. And that ball, honestly, it was hit so weakly is the only reason why he was safe. Because that was one of his normal, it's going to second for a double play. The only reason it wasn't is because it was going a half mile an hour, a mile an hour slower than normal. But in the playoffs, a good team, that pitcher's going to be there, or the first baseman's going to be there, and he's going to be out. And maybe there's two outs, and now you don't get that RBI. Yoshida seems like a really nice guy. He seems like he's streaking in himself. He's able to put together good at-bats when you don't need them, and then when you truly need them, it's usually a softball to first base, second base, out, double play, whatever the situation is, and we don't get any runs. I would put anyone on this team at this point over Yoshida, because you know what? Nick Sogard, Eaton, yeah, there's a chance Yoshida's ceiling is higher offensively than either one of those players, but defensively, not even close. Both of those guys have speed, are athletic, and are pretty sound defensively. Yoshida looks like a duck out of water when he is playing defensively, any position. Like, even just watching him run down the first base line, he looks like he's never played baseball. So, love the guy as a human being. Keep him away from this playoff roster if there is one.
Yeah, I totally agree, especially with the point about them being able to play the field and have flexibility there. You know, because if Yoshida's in the lineup, he has to be DH, and that's it. You know, you get Eaton, you get Sogard. Maybe Willier is, you know, not feeling 100%, and he can DH instead of have, and then you can put one of them in right field. You can't do that with Yoshida. And, you know, Yoshida comes up, you're praying that he can get what he did tonight, just those slap hits that he gets sometimes to right. If he doesn't get that, you know, I can't believe he beat that ball down the first baseline. You know, it was just slow enough to pull the guy off, and the pitcher was late getting over. You know, it was kind of like everything had to happen for him to be safe there. But, yeah, you know, he can have two-hit games like this. He can have nights. But when it comes down to flexibility with the roster and the lineup, I would rather see Eaton and Sogard in there over Yoshida in the playoffs for sure.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I see no reason if Abreu is healthy – and he's back in right field, Manning's position. Even as you mentioned, like if Abreu has a DH because he's still kind of working his way back, that's fine. Put Refsider in right like he did tonight. Like he's fine out there. He can do it. I'd much rather see Nate Eaton, who has good sprint speed. I don't know how good of a base stealer he is, but he's very fast. Gives you a professional at bat for the most part. And plays good defense, and he can play the infield if you want him to. He played third base earlier this year, so he's versatile. I'd rather him. I'd rather Nick Sogard. Nick Sogard is good defensively. He's not a joke at the plate. Is he the best hitter? No, but I'm sorry. Like, we're talking about Masataka Yoshida, who, yeah, he had two hits tonight. One of them was the softest line drive to right field I've ever seen in my life. Like, it wasn't exactly spanked. It was kind of looped into there. He doesn't make hard contact. It's so many ground balls to second base, and I know that's the cliche, but when you watch him and you see him get these fastballs down the middle and that's what he's doing, he just can't catch up. And when he's facing playoff competition, playoff caliber pitchers, that's all he's going to get. They got the book on him. Just throw over 99. He can't catch up. He can't do it. So give me Nate Eaton. Give me Nick Sogard. And give me Abreu in right field / DH if he needs a spell every now and then. I just think Yoshida has officially shown you that he's given you nothing. And I kind of said it on the show last night. Like, I'm done defending the guy. Like, I was willing to give him a shot going to the season. Let him get healthy. Let him get used to the schedule. And, you know, maybe he shows you something. But, and I know he was a victim of the outfield jam with Roman Anthony being inevitable and all that. Sedan having the first half that he had. Honestly, I still take Rafaela over Yoshida on the playoff roster just because of his defense. Yeah, his bat has turned into a wet noodle, but he's so good in center field. He's going to make a play for you in a playoff game. Like, he might go over four with four strikeouts, but he might rob a home run, or he might rob a triple, like something like that. So, because I know a lot of people are frustrated with Rafaela. I get it. But give me those guys over your Yoshida right now. If we're constructing a playoff roster, which hopefully in 10 days we are, then yeah, give me those guys.
The thing with Rafaela too is I know it's very disappointing how bad he's looked, and he's looked really, really bad. But he is our nine hitter. You know, I don't know how much production every team across the league is getting out of their nine hitter. And I know for certain none of them are as good as a fielder as Sedan. So, you know, I think you got to put up with your nine hitter sometimes not hitting when he still needs to be in the lineup every day because you need him in center field.
The thing with Rafaela, and I get we're frustrated as a fan base, but like, we just have to get to the point, guys. We've seen this before. He's Jackie Bradley Jr., but we didn't complain with Jackie Bradley Jr. Why? Because Mookie Betts, Devers, and all these other stars were on the team at the point. So it didn't hurt you as much when you're like, oh, wow, our nine hitter hits like a nine hitter. But with Rafaela, we're expecting him to be like a cleanup hitter batting ninth that also plays exceptional defense. It's really not fair to him. Yeah, it's frustrating. And his bat has become like a wet noodle, and he's not doing the things he was the first half. And it sucks. But I mean, we also have to be realistic here. And you know what's funny is like with Masataki Yoshida, because it seems like the last 2 weeks in particular, he's come up with the bases loaded a ton of times. And the only reason I know this is because every time he does, they have the stat cast, like his lifetime batting average with the bases loaded is 360. And I'm like, first of all, it seems like it's 360 every time he comes up, and yet he doesn't do anything. So that doesn't seem possible. And I'm like, when's the last time he actually got a hit with the base loaded? Because I've seen the stat for like four times in the last 2 weeks and nothing ever changes with it. I can't remember the last time he did something with the bases loaded, but you know, I see some of the comments here and people are like really crapping on Willier, and they're, you know, like Jules, I love Jules, always here. One of our best. Willier's a K machine, which is true. And I can't even argue with that. But the one thing I will say is that the off chance that Willier comes in, you know, cause one of them is going to be DH. Willier's maybe going to have a strikeout. But really, what is the difference between that and a soft ground roller that turns into a double play or an out at first at this point? If I had to choose with someone coming up and I'm down a run, do I want it to be Willier or do I want it to be Masa? Willier can hit a home run. Masataki Yoshida is more than likely not hitting a home run. That's how I feel at this point. And you know what the truth is? It's really an indictment on this team because really they're both crappy options to have at this point with what we need going forward, heading into the playoffs, if we make it.
Yeah, and you know, the difference between Abreu and Masa too is that pitchers approach those guys differently. Like Abreu, as you said, he's got the power. So pitchers, like, they still pitch him a little bit differently. Like, they don't want to give him the fastball chest high because he could drive it 450 feet. With Masa, they're not worried about that. They look at him and they go, yeah, no, he's going to be late on it, and he's going to chop it to second base. So there's an advantage there, and don't discount Abreu's difference that he makes in right field as an outfielder. Yes, Ref Snyder can play there. Yes, Nate Eaton can play there. They're both serviceable. Abreu is a gold glover, and frankly, if he hadn't missed so much time, he might get a second one this year. He's really good, especially in Fenway, at right field, and that can be all the difference sometimes, especially in playoff baseball. So I'm all set with having Abreu just come right in, take his slot back, and send Yoshida to Siberia for all I care, if you do make the playoffs. Because I just, yeah, Abreu might strike out. He might also hit that big three-run homer, or he might make that really impressive defensive play that you need in right field at that time. So, you know, I know people are down on him. I get it. It's been a long injury. It's been frustrating for him to take this long, but if he's right and he's good to go and he helps you not only get that wild card spot these last couple of games, but also, you know, win you a playoff game here and there with his bat or with his glove, it's going to be worth it.
100%. 100%. His upside and his ceiling is just so much higher than Mass's.
Yeah, I mean, Yoshida just gives you nothing. And, you know, I know he beat out a couple of ground balls tonight, but he's just, he's not a fit. He's not a fit for this team, so.
Right. Even if Masa could have a better, you know, batting average throughout a playoff series, it's like Abreu might have, you know, his few hits might be home runs and RBIs, you know, and he might throw a guy out trying to get the third. You know, and those upsides just put him over the edge of over Masa.
And honestly, as good as his batting average might be, it's never going to be good enough, and this team's not good enough to take advantage of it, to be honest with you. Like, our offense just isn't good enough. Because, yeah, even if he's batting over 300, like, I could see him just hitting singles. No one's on. No one drives him in. And it's very one-dimensional, right? And I'm not saying that, you know, Abreu is this, like, four-dimensional player. But he's not half or one-dimensional, and that's what Masa Takeyoshida is at this point. Again, nice guy, but he doesn't fit the roster construction that we need moving forward, especially with the team that we have right now and what we need to do if we make the playoffs at this point. So I think you just got to cut bait with him and we move along.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Agreed. And one last point I want to make on Rafaela before we get to the pitching matchup for tomorrow afternoon games. Rafaela, he's still young. I think he just turned 24. There were reports earlier, and there's rumors that he has trouble keeping on weight or putting on weight as the season goes on. I don't know if it's because of his workout regimen or whatever it is, but you can see, like, he's not a big guy. He's never going to be a big guy, but he's young. He's 24, 23, 24. Like, by the time he's 26, 27, he might bulk up more. He'll figure that out. Like, he's obviously got power. He's got natural power. We've seen that. And he's a good athlete. So, look, I'm not telling you he's going to turn to Mike Trout, where he's this big, bulky guy that hits 40 home runs a year and still plays, you know, phenomenal defense in center field. But I would just say to Red Sox fans, he's under contract anyway. He's already a Gold Glove center fielder. Give him time. It's very frustrating. I get it. When he's hitting, like, 100 over the month of September when you're in a wildcard race, yeah, super frustrating. But he's young. He's still kind of figuring out how to grow into his body, how to, you know, properly train. So I think Rafaela in 2 years is still going to be a major part of this offense. And I think the offense will come more consistently to him. Like, he'll be stronger at the plate and he'll still be just as good defensively. It's just, it's going to take time. It's not going to be instant. He's not Juan Soto. Like, it's okay. They don't all have to be Juan Soto. It just might take him time. So be patient with him. The defense is still there. I still think he's, and again, as Doug mentioned, he's your number nine hitter. It's okay. Yeah, the slump sucks, but he's your number nine hitter. Like, be patient with him.
Well, I mean, he has enough power for his size and build anyway. I mean, when he connects, I mean, he hits some moonshots, but really he just needs to work on his plate discipline, because sometimes it looks like he's golfing instead of playing baseball with the swings. But to be honest with you, I actually think the fact that he has more of a lean prototype actually helps him defensively. He's a lot more shifty and able to move laterally without having those issues. And when he runs into things, it probably doesn't hurt as much, and he's less likely to tear something because of his build. So there's definitely advantages to it. But yeah, I mean, he is what he is. I think we just need to appreciate him for what he is.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right, well, we got the series finale against the Athletics tomorrow. Brian Bayo going up against JT Jin. This is a 1:35 start on the East Coast. So, You know, we got a split series so far. How are we feeling about the finale, guys?
I like Bayo in this spot. I like Bayo. He didn't show his best stuff his last couple times, but I still trust Bayo in a big spot, in a big game. And, you know, he's given me no reason not to believe in him. And I think he's going to really step up here for us and, you know, finish this series off, because the whole locker room better feel the pressure that this is a must win at this point. You know, every game isn't a must win, but every series is a must win. So, you know, to have the series tied, we have to go into tomorrow looking at must win. And Bayo needs to feel that pressure and be able to, you know, take that on and go out and have a great game.
I feel okay. You know, every time I felt good about the pitching matchup going into a game or a series, it seems to bite me. I didn't think we'd be struggling to this point. We'd be looking at like needing Bayo in a day game nonetheless, which I know he hasn't really struggled in day games in a while, but of course this would be the time where it might rear its ugly head. But the pitching in general, like Giolito at this, like to your point, I have faith in Bayo after Crochet. To be honest with you, I might even have more faith in Bayo right now than Crochet. And I know that sounds crazy, but
I think that's pretty fair.
Giolito, like I don't want to say I'm out on him, but I don't trust him in a big spot in the least bit. He has looked, and I don't necessarily know if it's his fault. I just think he looks like the innings are catching up to him. It's been a while since he pitched this much, come off a major injury, and then you add pressure in a big market, which he hasn't had in a long time. I think it's starting to get to him. And Crochet hasn't looked himself. I think we're okay, but this is the type of game where if it gets out of hand quick, where they get runs quickly and we're struggling with runners in scoring position, which we have, I could see Bayo starting to revert back to getting in his mental games and not being himself, and that could be a recipe for disaster at this point in the season.
Yeah, I'm with you on Bayo's emotion. Like, he knows this is a big game because he knows that they need this series. And like you said, it's also a weird start time, like 1:35. It's a getaway game. They have to fly to Tampa. Nobody likes playing in Tampa in that stupid minor league stadium down there. So I wonder if that's kind of weighing on them a little bit, if they're scoreboard watching. This is one of those that, like Chris said, like if they get down early and, you know, they're not feeling it and Bayo, you know, kind of reverts to his old emotional ways, and you know, maybe they go down 4-0 early and they just can't fight back. And look, JT Jin is a, you know, he's a young pitcher, but he's not anything special. Like, this is a guy they should be able to get to, but we said that about, you know, Barnett today. And yeah, they got to him a little bit, but not as much as they could have. They still had to scrap and fight their way for a victory today. So I'm a little bit worried. Like, I think they'll win. I'm still going to predict a win. I'm hoping Bayo just goes out there and he's in shutdown mode. Like, no, we want to win this series. Let's get on the plane with some momentum heading down to Tampa and let's just, you know, nip this one in the bud. But again, I could see Chris's scenario where it doesn't go their way early. Maybe they have a couple errors or calls don't go their way. They're down a couple runs early and they just get in their own heads. So with this team right now, you can't guarantee a win at any point. Even if the matchup favors you, it's just they're kind of reeling at this point. They're kind of on the ropes. Like, holding a playoff position, they're on the ropes. They've got to find a way to get themselves off of it and bounce back. Tomorrow will be a good start. You've got the pitching matchup. You've got the better lineup. You know, it's a getaway day for both of you. Just get it done. You know, you're a good team at home. You've been a good team at home all year. Use that to your advantage. Get tomorrow done. Get that win in the win column. And worry about Tampa Bay when you land at Tampa International Airport. Don't be thinking about it before then. But with this team right now, I'm just not sure. I'm not sure where their mentality is at. So I'm still predicting a win, but I'm feeling very iffy about it. Not going to lie. So any final thoughts before we wrap up, guys?
No, just I'm with you on that. You know, I've said I believe in Bayo, but I don't believe in the lineup. So, you know, it's really a toss-up.
I mean, I hope Bayo's able to shove. I mean, this would be a big moment for the kid in a season where it's the first time he's really pitched this late with a chance at the playoffs. It would be a great moment for him in his career. So go Bayo, go Sox. Yeah,
agreed.
Yeah, 100%. Yep. All right, well, we'll wrap it on that. So have a good night, everyone else. And we'll be back tomorrow night after the Tampa game. Again, that's a 7:35 start. Or no, sorry, that's tomorrow, Thursday. Thursday's a 1:35 start. So we'll be back on at some point after that game. And then we'll preview the Tampa series after that. So have a good rest of your Wednesday night, everyone. We'll see you later. Take care.
Save big money on everything for your next bathroom project. Now at Menards. Upgrade your bathroom with Max. With more than 1,000 showers, bathtubs, and surrounds, you're sure to find exactly what you need to add luxury and style to your bathroom. Save big on our entire selection of Max bathroom products. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big.